this morning. I believe I'm right. In attendance, then, we'd also like to welcome the Deputy Director General acting, I hope it's going to be an appointment there, the CCRE, Mr. Nyati Enzi, and the Director of Law Policy, Mr. Konkani, and Mr. Mahotsi, the intern. Upright, the intern, Credit Law and Policy. And we've also got a Mr. Masharpa, Company Secretary, Credit Regulator. So that's everyone here. And we don't expect to have anything to add on the agenda. I'm just looking at it. We do, this is a very serious issue, the credit. It's something we've been asking for some time, so I'm sure many of you would have studied the material you were given. Has everyone get the material? Good. We now have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda. Yes, Honourable Williams, seconded by... Yes, thank you, Honourable Kooijhoff. And on that note, as this is our first meeting here in Parliament as a committee, for this portfolio committee, I hope we are all going to contribute a constructive year on the mandate that we are expected to comply with, that is the oversight of this area, trade industry. Can we then please ask Mr. Deputy the adoption, we've had that, for the National Credit Act. And I believe that yourself, Advocate Tongwani, isn't it? But perhaps as DTI is present, you may wish to make some comments. Yes, it's Henry.
I thank the Chair and Honourable Chair, Honourable House, compliment of the excuse me. Okay, by way of introduction, the Chair will be doing the presentation. Okay, no problem. And then I have my team. I will do the background. And then the Director Konkani will take you through the substantive issues, and thereafter there will be clarification questions from your side, and the team will deal with such questions. May I start? Okay. The Honourable House, that is the institution. I know that when we were here with the amendments in 2013-2014, the constitution of the House was not like this, except the chairperson and then maybe Honorable ABA member. And the surname is Avenue, who is
it's been some time since you were with us, but we have the Honourable Phil Lewis, who is up to DOT, and his colleague here, the Honourable Matt Burson. There's also the IFC here in attendance as well, the Honourable Mr. Hazen. I think the remaining members of the IFC are standing right in the front.
No, thanks for that clarification. But all in all is that we were busy with amendments to the Credit Act, National Credit Act, and then during that time, the Portfolio Committee instructed the DTI under the auspices of saying, why are there so many hidden costs? The cost of credit is so high in South Africa. May you please go and look at that. Do you have powers in terms of the act in order to change these scenarios and then we indicated that the CEO of the National Credit Regulator, NCR, can do some capping and then can recommend to the minister to change this thing. And then there was also the issue of affordability assessment criteria that was still guidelines. And then banks or credit providers were very choosy in applying them. In other words, guidelines and guidelines. So, and then we indicated that there were also costs that come from, as an example, from the angle of the Department of Justice, that long name, Correctional Services, and then Justice Department has got the magistracy, and then the magistracy has got their own act, but when they apply for this issue of judgment, they don't apply their mind in a way of coming with guidelines like affordability assessment guidelines then. And then you find that people are having judgments, and then the attorneys are acquainted by the credit providers as debt collectors, but they don't play according to the rules of the debt collect Act. They apply the attorneys Act, which comes with different percentages in rates, and therefore this cumulative effect is impacting on 1% the consumer. Then, because of that instruction, we went back now in attending to the issue of regulation. So the purpose today is to account to the Honorable House and give you the regulations that we came about with. And then we will also deal with the issue of the magistrate for a little bit, and the issue of the social development a little bit. You will recall that during the amendment, the Department of Social Development wanted us to amend that credit, their Social Development Act legislation, and then tediously we refused, but we said we will do something in the affordability assessment, and then in that regulation we will have sort of a buffer to say if you want to solicit a credit as a social, as a pensioner, you should be left with 800. You should be left with 800, and that you can't use as a buffer. As an example, I'm giving this background to show that it's not only the DTI that has to do something in order to alleviate the plight of the consumer. So is the National Treasury for Finance. They also have their FSB, Financial Services Board, the insurances and the like. There are also hidden costs there. They need to do something. Because of that instruction, we went back to form a task team led by the two DDGs. That is Momo Nyat and Zodwan Tuli, and then followed by their agencies, FLP, NCR, as a technical team. And then we say this is our mandate, and therefore we would like to start with the affordability assessment. And now it is a regulation, it's no longer a guideline. So those regulations were issued. Okay, I'm starting now to tell them. Those regulations were issued, and then what happened is that the NCR wrote a letter as a form of consultation with the minister to say we request that turn these guidelines into regulation. And then for the task team of DTI, the National Treasury, we met and we worked on them. Whilst we were working on them, the issue of maintenance came. I think it was a political issue. It came to us to say it was doable. because when they do assessments, they look at your bank statements, they look at various orders that are against you, but you may find that I'm supporting my illegitimate children, and then that order is not appearing anywhere. And then when the credit provider is looking at my whether I qualify or not, he or she does not know that there are other orders behind the scenes, like a maintenance order. And therefore, in the regulation of affordability assessment, we had two questions in the regulation that these are the questions that should be asked, including the maintenance order as an example. So, and another issue is that ever since 2007, when the Act came into being, there were no review of these fees, these costs. There was no review. And therefore, during consultation, we had a lot of problems from the credit providers and other people saying, but it's too much, why can't you do it in place? And then we said, ever since 2008, there has not been a review of this. So therefore, in terms of the Act, it says there should be a review. So it has been known, if it is a risk, it was not hidden. It was in the Act to say after 5 years or so, make a review of these issues. So I'm just clarifying. And then the other issue, the garnishing orders. As an example, garnishing orders, I would say that's where a person's salary is attached. It's attached to say at the end of the month, you as an employer, as an example, you should transmit money to the creditor, attach this order against the salary of the debtor. And then it is being done, I will be advised by my team whether government is still doing that. I'm not so sure. We have inquired this and that, but maybe my team will advise me. But employers, always, they may be having a contempt of court if the order is coming to be attached an exchange of salary. You'll find that my salary is 1,000, let's say 100 for simplicity, and then there are many orders that the lawyer is just selling to the creditors, and then you'll find that I'm left with 2 rand. I'm just exaggerating.
Yeah.
So the situation is pathetic. It's pathetic since the employer is in the equation of doing something that is not good, because our affordability assessment was not done. So these issues won't happen per se if affordability assessment is being done. The credit providers therefore will be forced to apply the affordability assessment that came into force in it was somewhere in April, but they were postponed to September, is 2014. So therefore, it took some time. Behind the scenes, we are looking to do this and that, and then it took some time to implement them. Since September, there have been cases which the presenter will give you how they were applied, the investigating, reckless lending, all those issues. I don't want to spill the thunder. But all is that that team was finance and national treasury, and then we also have the Justice Department. In the presentation, you can see that we're working with the DOJ, and the Magistrate Act has to be amended. When we were still jittering to-ing and fro-ing, the judgment Stellenbosch case came into being. We call it Desai. Generally, we call it by the judge's name. Desai's judgment came, and the judge was all right because people in the farm, the workers, were so overly indebted to the employer. At the end of the month, the employer subtracts whatever is owed, and then the dignity is affected. The Human Rights Commission also went into that space, and therefore the SAI went to an extent of the human endeavor for the ability assessment, like in the credit agreement of the DTI. And then the DG also made an affidavit to assist the courts where to go. So this act is being amended so that there should be no punitive action giving credit without knowing whether the person will be able to pay. So they will also do it through the Debt Collectors Act that is under the Justice Department, where they have a framework. It's not good, it's not bad, but you find that the action is well given this the right to demand. You find that they no longer use this one, the Debt Collectors Act. They go and use the attorney's regime, which comes with higher percentages. And then we are saying, no, that can't be. So they are amending the act, we are working together. And then the side judgment there is this. And then generally, the issues, amongst other issues of concern to yourself, these are the following. Whilst we were working on that, cabinet came with a cabinet decision and mandated the Department of Trade and Industry and the Minister of Trade and Industry and the Justice as well as Finance to say, tell us about the issue of household indebtedness. What is the scenario? So we combine the two, the high cost of credit and the household over indebtedness. So we are reacting to that. So generally these are the issues. The act provides that the reckless lending should be dealt with. MCR should refer cases. They will come with cases. And then you should deal with the abuse of credit insurance as an example. So we'll talk about credit life insurance example. It's where say a pensioner buys chairs of households, and then you find that they are now forced to have an insurance against that. In case if you are, as an example, if you are retrenched, how can a pensioner be retrenched? As an example. But they are forced to enter into that insurance type of insurance. The commander will go into detail. And then the issue of judgments and garnishing orders, I've already alluded to it. And then the issue of lack of education and awareness about credit issues. Then there is a duty from our side that we should have, not campaigns, education and awareness to say, please, you are earning this salary, use it responsibly. So financial literacy is lacking. And the discretionary credit guidelines are already appropriate. Honesty and disclosure by credit providers and consumers. And consumers also have a problem because they go there, they don't disclose everything. The issue of maintenance, I single detail deliberately, that I've got court orders against me to support the illegitimate child, the children, I don't reveal. So the credit provider is not wrong to give me a credit because he or she does not know. So therefore, if there is no honesty, it is not only the credit providers who should be honest, also consumers should be honest. Yeah. So I'm closing on the issue of going into substance. The commander would go into various details. So we talk about affordability assessment. We talk about credit life insurance as an example. The other issues is that we'll talk about is the threshold. If you may recall, you ordered us to say everybody should be registered. any person who grant credit should be registered. And then everybody should be registered. And then what happens is that it came because of one case. There was the case, the ex provided that this is a framework for a person to be registered as a credit provider. It may be, say, you must have 100,000 rand, and then therefore what is required is to say if a person is not registered, there is a problem that you grant a credit, somebody may refuse to pay. To say, because you are not registered in terms of the act, I'm not paying you. It happened. Because of that, so the case, there's a court clarified to say, no, it's true that this person is the credit provider, in inverted commas, it's not registered. But you are unjustifiably enriched. It's a common law principle that if you are unjustifiably enriched, then you should pay. So after that clarification, we came back to Parliament and then we said everybody, majority, will have to be registered. So that's what we have done. So Supermanda will go into detail into that. So there are also rules of the credit, the Consumer Tribunal, National Consumer Tribunal, that we have tempered with a little bit, and then also to raise the funds, also to increase the fees of the registrant. So these are the five regulations that Supermanda, my colleague, will go into detail, and then it's not long, but the presentation seems to be long, but I tried to capture everything in the background. So, without further ado, through your permission, may we exchange it so that my colleague can come to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. Good morning to the chairperson and the other honorable members. And thank you very much,
Mr. Kumkani.
Yes, maybe by way of introduction, I should indicate that I'm the director responsible for trade law and policy within the EGI. I think my role will be basically to deal with some of the technical issues around all the regulations. And I should first indicate that this is just a package of solutions that Cabinet and Parliament decided to come up with, looking at the problem of over-indebtedness in South Africa. So, and also to indicate that after we have actually finalized all of these regulations, of which some of them were finalized, we're going to allow the industry to operate without any uncertainty and so on. And to the extent that the only thing that we'll be focusing on will be more on education and awareness campaigns in terms of ensuring that people understand these regulations as finalized. Maybe on slide 9, as reflected on the screen, I should indicate that in the sector of the affordability assessment regulations, we have finalized them. They are in operation since the 14th of September 2014, and the industry is expected to be in full compliance. We've had quite a number of interactions with the industry together with the NGR. And in summary, the affordability assessment criteria is in force, and among other issues, it talks to issues of maintenance and social grants. Social grants can no longer be used as collateral to obtain loans. And in relation to the Social Development Act, it's on issues relating to 10% of policies, funeral covers and so on. And we've came up with a buffer where we have indicated that up to an amount of 800 grants should remain within that space. The National Credit Regulator currently is actually in a position to investigate reckless lending, which was never the case before, but due to the finalization of the regulations, then they can have a full-fledged investigation into reckless lending processes and refer them to the NCT, which is the National Consumer Tribunal, for any award or ruling. So that actually, I mean, brings us to the point that even the NCT now is in a position to adjudicate on cases of reckless lending. And we will definitely maybe explain later on in terms of the issues that have come up before the tribunal at this current moment. And also the total disclosure of the cost of credit and capital of credit insurance. After we have finalized the affordability assessment regulations, we actually came up with the cap of interest. I think it was also the mandate of Parliament, part of the project that NCR together with DTI came up with, to say the interest rates or the interest charge for any borrowings are quite too high and they need to be brought down, of which as part of this process, that's what we've managed to do in some of the areas. In respect to provision of sale and collection of prescribed debt, the Department of Justice together with DTI and the National Treasury under the Intergovernmental Council is currently working on repealing or amending the prescription act. As you would remember, Chairperson, when we dealt with the National Credit Amendment Act 2014 together with the regulations, we indicated that there should no longer be any sale or collection of a prescribed debt. So credit providers are required to ensure that whenever, in respect of the data that they are forwarding into the credit bureaus, all those particular debts are not prescribed, thereby presenting a situation whereby when you want to access credit, you are told by a credit bureau that no, you still owe, whereas the debt has already been prescribed. So we are working with the Department of Justice also to ensure that what we have provided in the NCA should also be in the Prescription Act. And then the automatic removal of address credit information. You would remember that we went across the country and provided, you know, the used to be so-called amnesty to consumers in terms of ensuring that they start on clean slate. That project was done and then finalized. And then the only thing that now is currently being done is to assess the impact of that project in respect of over-indebtedness in South Africa. And then, of course, at a later stage, we will come back to Parliament and explain how far we are and what are the outcomes of that. I think McDonald has already indicated on this in terms of the response of the suspension of the affordability assessment regulations and when they became effective. And to say that NCR is currently now as an implementing agent conducting investigation and checking whether or not the industry is in compliance with the regulations. And then that would be basically the discussion and the issues around affordability assessment. And we would definitely maybe take questions of any, you know, form at the end of the presentation. But my next, you know, part will be in relation to the capping of interest rates and fees. Maybe by the way of background, even Parliament gave us a mandate to go back and revise the caps, because since 2007, since the act was came to be, there has never been any review of interest rates and fees. That was actually what prompted, you know, Parliament to instruct the EGI and the SEI. Secondly, I should remind the House that there was also a case that was lodged by Microfinance South Africa in respect of service fees, where they actually took the Minister of Trade and Industry and the NCR to court in order to review service fees. But basically, their response was to say that we cannot review service fees in isolation of other interest-related fees. And the matter was, you know, taken to court. Judgment was granted against the department, but we then indicated that we will do a full review of interest-related fees, and see how started with the problem. And, you know, they did the research and then made recommendations to the design. And then after, you know, several allegations and meetings, we then agreed on the first draft of regulations on fees, maximum interest rates, initiation fees, and service fees. Roughly, then on the sometime last year, we published the first draft of interest rates and fees, trying to come up with the capping. In terms of the gazette, government gazette number 38911, we made, you know, certain proposals where we changed the maximum rates for unsecured credit from 32.65 to 34%. Mortgages from 17.65 to 17.75. Credit facilities from 26.65 to 19.78. Developmental credits from 32% to more or less 32.78. And other credit agreements from 22.65 to 22.75. And I should also indicate that in terms of incidental credit, there was no changes that were proposed. In respect of short-term credit transaction, they remain 5%. The month for the first loan, and then we proposed 3% for subsequent loans. Then we, sometime last year, we then invited the public to comment on the draft list of regulations. But as a matter of consulting, whenever as a division we issue regulations for the first time, we normally target the key stakeholders and have consultative meetings with them in order to have preliminary, you know, submissions where we engage with them. So during the month of July, after we have then published the regulations on the 25th of June, we had consultative meetings with a number of stakeholders in order to engage with them so that they can, when they submit their formal written submission, we would have been engaged. So it's something that has been sort of a norm or a culture within the division, so that we know that some of the issues, we can be able to clarify them before we even receive the final submissions. So that's the opportunity that we give stakeholders so that they can actually beef up the process in order to ensure that the minister, you know, make a final determination based on a number of issues that have been raised. What we would then do is to consolidate the inputs and the submissions and analyze them. And that is the process of, you know, trying to revise and ensure that you look at each and every input from each and every stakeholder, where and if you agree, then you can perhaps make some changes. If you don't agree, then you explain why you don't agree. So I think the process was well, you know, built in the sense that it enriched our proposal to the minister, to ensure that the minister made a final determination. I already alluded to the issue of the case by Ampro Finance in respect of the review of service fees. Then the final regulations after interacting with the stakeholders were published on the 6th of November 2015, where the minister had sort of agreed with our proposals. To the extent that I think it would be proper to indicate that we have given the industry a 6 months with a period, and so that they can actually work out on their IT system and do the necessary adjustments. We didn't want to find the same environment with affordability assessment criteria where we had a lot of requests for postponement. So of which we within the review of the regulations will then be enforced on the 6th of May 2006. And the 26 million is already there. So to explain that, only new credit agreements will be affected by that particular form of regulations. So on the 6th and after the 6th of May 2016. So that's how we have actually finalized the review of interest rates and fees. And we will then be conducting education and awareness campaigns in order to ensure that everybody is aware. These were the next slide would in summary getting into the technical aspects of it. We have actually based on the proposal that we have received from stakeholders. There was a multiplier, you know, formula that was used initially to determine the amount of fees to be charged. But having read and consolidated and analyzed the data from the stakeholders, we found that the formula of the repo rate plus would be the most appropriate one. To the extent that that's how we have actually come up with a proper, you know, acceptable formula in order to make it a final determination in terms of what should be charged. To the extent that when the final regulations came up, the spread of unsecured credit, we had actually decreased them from 32% to 27%. And then to remind the chairperson in the house that unsecured was the most problematic area. We made reference to the desire case, the Ganeshi orders, you know, because of the abuse thereof in that space. Mortgages were also increased from 17% to 18%. So I think the slight increase of expenditure. We have actually increased the service fees, which was the sort of the point of contention with the microfinance of Africa from 50 rand to 60 rand. In order to ensure that we sort of comply with the court order, but that was also based on the data that was collected, the research that was done, to say that the most appropriate increase would be by 10 rand. Then the, as I've indicated, the regulation would be effective on the 6th of May. It will affect new credit agreements, and that will be true, and after the 30th day. Based on the fact that the formula that we have used is repo rate plus, there will be a bit of a slight impact whenever now that the repo rate is going up. Maybe I should also indicate that I think the country is under enormous pressure economically, even I mean in terms of the debt quarter. You know, there was a contraction in terms of the growth, and during this, the World Bank, you know, the research has actually indicated that the 1.4% that we had, you know, anticipated as growth, is not going to be achievable. You know, to the extent that there's high, you know, there's sort of a lot of increase in food prices. There's a lot of challenges, you know, for consumers, and I want to believe that some of these particular solutions will definitely shield consumers from the problem. So I want to believe that some of these particular solutions will definitely, you know, protect consumers in terms of minimizing the level of over-indebtedness. So the slides clearly that indicate the current actually position as the repo rate plus, and the position that will come into being come the 6th of May 2016. When we finalized the interest rates, the repo rate was at 5.75%. But recently it has been increased by 50 basis points, which takes us to 6.75. So if you look at the last column on the right, it's a reflection of come the 6th of May, of how the final, you know, percentages will be. For example, the unsecured, it will drop from 34.85 to 27.75. That's by way of example. So that will be the position come the 6th of May. We had probably one might have a question on developmental credit. Why developmental credit as an example? Why developmental credit, for example, has gone up? I think government took a position in collaboration with the banking institution to say that they want to promote developmental credit, and to the extent that there are sort of signs of positive signs in, towards moving to a situation where financial institutions would have more appetite for developmental credit. You know, because you don't want this, request for loan for construction only. People should actually at least, have something developmental, you know, in it. So there are programs in place, and then a memorandum of understanding that has been signed between BASA and the Department of Social, or Department of Human Settlement, to ensure that we promote advanced finance. That will be my presentation on credit life, on interest rate and fees. Then the second last aspect will be the credit life insurance regulations. Maybe by way of a background, Chairperson. The credit life insurance regulation came as a result of a lot of abuse in the credit market. Many people were given, you know, credit life insurance for things that they really do not need. So as a result of that, I mean, there was quite a lot of pressure on government to do something. To the extent that we then took ourselves together with the National Bank Regulator and Financial Service Board. Financial Service Board, as a regulator that is responsible for insurance, they had to come up with a draft. As part of the process, they met and engaged on the content of the draft, and they presented the draft to the DGI and National Treasury. We then sort of agree on the content of the draft. Maybe I should just, by way of example, indicate some of the inconsistencies where you find that for the same product, consumers will be charged amounts. It could be 20 rand, it could be 30 rand, it could be 40 rand in some instances. Whereas the product is the same, the number of months are the same. So some of those inconsistencies in the way that credit life was being, you know, granted. It's not that, I mean, sometimes consumers do not have an option because you want to have access to credit, but without knowing what are the hidden costs around that particular credit. And that's why then there were those inconsistencies. And then as required by the Act in terms of Section 106 of 8, we had to get into an agreement with the Minister of Finance in terms of this is exactly what we want to see as kept. And of which we then consulted with them between March and October last year in order to reach an agreement before we issue the regulations for initial publication, you know. This now an initial draft, this is what came out. We then proposed a reduction or a capping of 450,000 rand per month on a credit life insurance. These are just, you know, a number of different types of credit limits. By way of an example, on mortgages, we proposed a 2 rand per 1,000 rand of the deferred amount. So we published these regulations on the 30th of November last year. We had, because of the festive season, we had given the industry up until 6th of January to make submissions and proposals. And I'm happy to indicate that we have received quite a number of submissions, and we have already consolidated them. Now we are in the process of meeting with NCR, the FSB, and the National Treasurer in order to come up with a document that will be going to the Minister of Trade and Industry and consult with the Minister of Finance and make a final determination. So in terms of the processes, before the end of this month, we would want to have perhaps finalized the process of analyzing and revising the credit life relations as they were published and make proposals to the minister. And then we would do the same. We propose more or less 6 months window period in order to give the industry an opportunity to work on their IT systems. So these are the proposed, you know, as they appear. The next slide is a presentation of who we met and so on and so on. And I indicated earlier that we normally have close consultative meetings in order to clarify any issues that are sort of would be of concern to the industry. I should also indicate that the final credit life insurance regulations will only be affecting new credit agreements. Aventas into on the day or after the effective date. So maybe one should be, you know, asking why, you know, because there's a rule against retrospectivity. You don't want to find yourself into inviting unintended consequences. That is the reason why all these regulations will only affect new credit agreements, not old credit agreements, because at a time when old credit agreements were entered into, the regulations were not enforced. I must also indicate that as a result of the abuse of the credit life insurance, the NCR is currently taking, you know, actions and conducting investigations against abuse of credit life insurance. These are some of the abuses, you know, that we actually identified, to the extent that they have taken, you know, certain cases and referred them to the National Consumer Tribunal. For example, against Louis Dos, Fidmont Mutual Bank, the Joshua Doe Group, Shoprite Investment, and the National Captive Insurance. You might have seen even on the newspapers sometime last year on the case against Louis, they are currently, you know, refunding 67.1 million customers. So that's it shows the impact and the level of abuse that has been there. Because we're only talking of one group of companies, that is Louis. That will be my presentation on credit life, and then therefore these regulations will be effective 6 months after the finalization. Then the next one would be the threshold for all credit providers. The gentleman would remember that when we had discussions on the National Credit Amendment Act, the issue was, what do we do with the loan sharks, both informal and illegal operators? To the extent that within the NCAA, he made provisions to indicate that the threshold should actually be done away of other credit agreements and so on and so on. Now we should come up with a zero or a nil threshold where everybody, if you are involved in the business of lending money, should be registered with the NCR. That decision was taken by Parliament, and we had them to make provision for that in the NCAA. Now, as a matter of implementing that, I think on the 4th of February, we have published a notice in the Government Gazette inviting the public to comment on the threshold for all credit providers. With the extent that I think I'm happy to indicate that my acting DDG has indicated that after we have finalized the process, or even during the process, we will be arranging workshops across the province. Of course, working together with the NCR. That is currently the proposal, and made with loan sharks and those operating illegally, in order to actually promote registration and so that they register their businesses as formal businesses. So that's the implication of the regulations. And then lastly, we also issued on the 21st of January determination of fees for all registrants, like the PDAs, payment distribution agents, alternative dispute resolution agents, credit providers, and debt counselors. I should indicate, Mr. President, that the fees have not been reviewed since 2007. So we, in reviewing them, we came up with a 10% inflation-aligned increment of fees. So to ensure that that will also help, you know, the regulator in terms of, you know, ensuring that it expands its operations well. So we have published that determination of fees for all registrants on the 21st of January, inviting the public to make submissions. We will engage with them and see what will be the final product. The main proposal in terms of this.
Noted here that there was a technicality there, so had
yes.
Exactly when that they published.
Oh yes, there was a technicality share with the government printers, because we had already sent the documents to them. Unfortunately, they only sent us a confirmation of what was published, only to find out the documents were not published. Then we made a follow up. Maybe I should also indicate that now government printers, they use an electronic system. You no longer have a personal interaction with the officials. All documents have to be submitted electronically. But somehow they made a mistake of perhaps issuing a notice of publication before they were published. But I'm happy to indicate that after interaction with them, we have managed them to publish the documents on the 4th, as we failed in February. Yes, all of them were published. So we will then be engaging with the embassy in terms of whatever concept that will raise and come up with the final, you know, product. Yes. We more or less looking at around end of April to have these processes finalized. Then the effective date will be another issue. Yes. And I think the main purpose of taking a determination at threshold is to ensure that informal and illegal credit markets are regulated and consumers are protected. That would be the slides that deal with the threshold and the determination of fees. A short presentation that we thought that it would be necessary for the committee to be privy to, as you have instructed the DGR, and also and you had encouraged, you know, coordinated efforts or coordinated efforts among the government departments in order to achieve all these particular, you know, issues and ensure that they get into a finalization. DTI, together with the National Treasury and the Department of Justice, were mandated by the cabinet, and we formulated the intergovernmental scheme, which was considered or comprised of the FSB and NCR and the Reserve Bank and the National Consumer Commission. We had also attached a grid, which actually was addressing all the issues within the mandate that was given. That was 2013 in November. Among other issues that were this department board mandated was to, among the issues that the department board mandated was to improve credit flow arrangement, which we dealt with the amnesty and the removal of administrative information, and also to encourage employers to investigate employment management orders. And I'm quite very pleased, to indicate that we made a presentation to the Department of Justice Executive Board where we made proposals in respect of the amendment of the Magistrate Court, where we even we were all in agreement that whenever there's an employment assessment order request, affordability assessment criteria should actually be conducted before any employment assessment order is granted. And to the extent that as part of the intergovernmental working committee, Treasury was actually requested to issue letters to all government departments and to ensure that that is actually, you know, should be implemented. Whenever EAOs are sort of applied for, affordability should actually be a determining factor. It should not be a market approach that you are overinted and therefore this particular creditor wants 50% of your salary, the other one wants 40%. And we have made proposal that at least not more than 40% of the emolument attachment orders or of the salary should actually be used for emolument attachment orders. So those are some of the issues that are still underway and the discussions that are still going on with the within the Intergovernmental Working Committee. So the rest of the issues are issues that we have all dealt with, review of cash that are passed on, understanding. These are all the issues that were mandated, you know, DI and NT and DOJ, and also cooperation and coordination with regulators. And then in conclusion, I think the implementation of the NCA Act, the review of fees and interest rates, credit life insurance regulation and the threshold, I think they will definitely make a huge impact as anticipated in terms of shielding consumers from, you know, getting to the worst scenario in terms of their debt. We will come up with a study over, let's say, within a period of 3 years or so in terms of determining the impact of these regulations that we've put in place. And I think I'm happy to indicate that although DOJ is moving very smoothly in amending its legislation in order to ensure that we're going into the same direction in respect of the Magistrate Court Act, the Debt Collectors Act, the Prescription Court as well, the Prescription Act as well. Both the National Credit Regulator and the National Consumer Tribunal, now they are in a position to deal with issues of reckless lending. But, you know, there's always an issue where the government has always been accused of being pro-consumer. Within the amendment of the NCA and the regulations, we have indicated that it is also the responsibility of the consumer to disclose the cost of credit, disclose the expenses, failing which the credit provider can raise a defense on reckless lending, to the extent that if you don't disclose that you pay maintenance for your spouse, your kids, your children, or even your grandchildren, then I mean the bank or any financial institution that has granted loan based on what you provided, they can raise defense of against, you know, reckless lending case that can be brought against them because you never properly disclose. So I'm just trying to say that in doing all these regulations, I think we try by all means to come up with a balance in the end to ensure that both credit providers and consumers are protected. We also enhanced under the NCA the coordination efforts, you know, in terms of Section 17.4 of the National Credit Act to ensure that in terms of issues that would be cross-cutting, mandates that are sort of not clear. There should be coordination, cooperation, and sharing of data, and also in terms for enforcement agents and so on. So these are some of the issues that would definitely be good, you know, for consumer and credit providers. As I indicated that the grid that we came up with, we will be going to cabinet very soon in terms of reporting on the issues that were mandated by cabinet, and that report is still being drafted. And when we finalize it, we will report to cabinet and parliament in terms of work that we mandated to do, of which part of it is what we have actually presented today. Thank you so much.
Director of Credit Law and Policy. Members, I'm just looking at my watch as well and clarifying whether or not the tea is there. It's not here yet, otherwise we would have broken at this point had the tea break. But it isn't here as we talk. So let us complete the inputs we've also got. Thank you very much, Mr. Kumkani. Perhaps yourself, Mr. Nietzsche Kinsey, you want to add something, and anyone else on your side?
I just want to further clarify issues that were raised, that we have this interdepartmental team. The instruction was to say, please work within your mandate, in a sense that DTI will never, under no circumstances, one day wants to usurp or take the Magistrate Act to fall under the DTI. It will rather influence it to say, hey, you please use the affordability assessment criteria as directed by the side, the judgment of the Rambos case. But there is a temptation, if you look at the space, there is a temptation that we may be tempted to take power of another department, which is not an infraction, because the Act, in terms of Section 74 of the National Credit Act, talks about coordination, not taking or using the power of another department. Maybe if you can monitor what is happening in the National Treasury space, the DTI, finance, that consideration, the issue of Twin Peak, this committee may also want to interact with its sister organization within Parliament in that regard. And then coordination, I think we are dealt with. Deadlines, we may meet certain deadlines. You saw that from 2015 March up to November, there was a big lapse. It comes because when we amended the legislation, that is this committee, we changed it to the wording was after consultation. After consultation means I can consult with you. If you are not moving, I can go ahead. But we changed after to in consultation. In consultation means that if you are not moving, then I can't do anything. That's what happened. So therefore, sometimes you may recall us to come here, and then we will say we are not moving. Please, Parliament, maybe you can also use your powers to subtract this issue politically, because it's beyond us as your place. And then the other issue worthy of mentioning is that the consultation. Consultation, if it happens during November, December is a dead month, a culture that we have in the region. We don't count it as a month for consultation. If something is published, you saw that something was published in November and the like, because of that season, we automatically give an extension. You understand, that it delays whatever we want to achieve. But we saw certain departments like health, the Constitutional Court, they were thrashed to say this is not compensation because these are just done. Yes, so we are taking into account, but at the same time missing deadline. So we're just pleading that bear with us. But generally, retrospectivity, we are very sensitive about it. We talk at this, we concluded with the minister, but this is a guidance that we always do, that whatever we come with should be prospective, not going back. But sometimes behind the scenes, we find that it should go back, but we find that let's go prospectively. And then some people may say, you are not protecting the consumers because it was illegal when those days took place. So please bear with us. And finally, that we oblige, we try very hard to oblige when we are instructed to go and do something. And if we enter that department, it is working mostly, in particular with National Treasury and the Department of Justice. It is working very well. Also the Department of Social Development. Now the Department of Public Service and Administration, because of this emolument order, it will have to come into equation, because you may find that government now allows itself to be a debt collector. That scenario, we should stay away or educate the public. So all in all, that is the contribution that I wanted to do. You asked me whether there is somebody from my team. I have not yet looked at the regulator, whether it wants to make an input before classification. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nechende. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I am with Advocate Robert Changwan. Is our acting CEO. The MCR in the meantime has been leading up its enforcement efforts. There was a slide on the presentation on our wide-ranging investigations into abuses of credit life insurance, and we've referred around 5 cases on credit insurance last year. But more importantly, Chair, after the Pelham Bosch judgment was delivered, the NCR took the initiative to go to Kimberley, the Kimberley Magistrates Court, conduct an investigation into the garnishee orders that were obtained illegally through the Kimberley Magistrates Court. And we were able to refer 5 cases between October and December last year to the tribunal based on that investigation, where we found that the garnishee orders were obtained in the incorrect court, and consumers were also forced to sign consent to the jurisdiction of the wrong courts. And in the retail space, we've also filed 2 big cases against the JEG and ESCOM, where we found that they were charging black fees on credit agreements, which, according to our legislation, we believe that they shouldn't have charged that act. So we now very busy with very big cases, and we are continuing with our monitoring efforts to ensure that we effectively enforce the National Credit Act. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, you just say JDG, is that Joshua Ball Group? Thank you. There was just one aspect, DG, and that is the issue which you refer to on delays. But before you can just clarify that, I'm not sure if you were referring to the interdepartmental task team, where perhaps certain departments are delaying, because you then also went on to say you have very good relations with fire and etc. So where would the delay be coming from that leads to deadlines not being met?
I think at the The bureaucrats will meet, that is the technical, okay. Everything is done, and then it comes to the DDGs, everything is done. Thereafter we say, therefore, let's offer a letter from our minister to the other minister, so things may be lost in between that process. That's what I'm referring to. But meetings as a grid, that grid that we attach.
Just then, before we engage and put forward our own questions and engage on that, we'll have tea, please. And we've got tea scheduled for 11 o'clock to 11:15, so please need to get back at 5. If it's earlier than that, tea pass, please.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The camera's still moving on other two, right?
The DTI, and when we went over this with Sheldon and myself, we realized it's been 7 years, you know, really in trying to get this done, and it's become a more serious problem every day, but you can see how complicated it is, and the different ministries and departments it involves, etc., the amendment to make principal acts of legislation. Wasn't a simple exercise at all. And you now have the opportunity to engage on this. So I'm going to just recognize the hands as they come up. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Williams, Honourable Albert, Honourable Yesterhazen, like Honourable Cordell. In that order, and let's keep for 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. It's good to be back. What a wake-up call to see some of these figures before us today. I mean, I think the one thing that stands out is that there's more people with credit than are actually employed in this country. And that is a very, very concerning fact. That there are people that have access to credit or are already indebted and have no ability to pay that back. And that's just with the rest of credit providers that we know of. So I think it's incumbent on us to speed up whatever needs to be done to get the situation under control. Which brings me to slide 15. Now, I don't see the limitations on interest rates as any form of concession, page 15, as any form of concession or stabilization of interest rates charged. Because remember that the figures that are given are obviously including the repo rate, but I mean, to get the limitation of 18% on mortgages, I mean, it's totally unaffordable to any person who is looking to enter into the property market. To have developmental credit actually increase in its limitation does simply not make sense. Why would you increase the limitation of developmental credit when it's supposed to be doing exactly what's described as developmental projects? Surely you would want to make that limitation of credit actually cheaper, not more expensive. I don't think the limitations are actually impressive. I think that they're actually quite worrying that the department thinks that that's a good thing to have mortgages and developmental credit limited to exorbitant amounts like that. I think that what we need to do is actually start benchmarking ourselves. And I would like to know what those benchmarks are, because I'm quite sure that in places like the United Kingdom, that the limitation to certain things like unsecured credit is around 6 or 7%. I remember 2 or 3 years ago and I know it's the chairperson, so a company to pick on, Wunga, was all before the Select Committee in Westminster, because they were charging people 6% on their unsecured credit agreements. It doesn't make sense, why these figures are so great. Then with the issue to credit life insurance and credit insurance, I was going through my credit card statement, and I saw an amount that to be honest, I've never seen it before, of insurance. I've never asked for it. I never applied for it. They just put it onto my credit card, and I've gone for a number of years.
Yeah, what you have to say, but you've spoken
for 12
minutes.
I'll wrap up in 30 seconds then. And the guys had just put it on there without my consent. And I think the banks need to start being held liable for these sorts of things. They actually need to start being transparent of how they actually start pricing their credit agreements, and whether it's insurance or credit on unsecured or secured credit. And I think that's a discussion that we need to start having fairly urgently.
Thank you. Let's try and stick to 3 minutes, not four.
Thanks, Chair. So I've just got 2 points I'd like to raise. The first one is about hidden costs. I'd just like to say that through my life experience of dealing with banks and credit, the hidden costs are very hidden, and I think that there should be a process put in place where we can make it possible for the hidden costs to be more openly and clearly disclosed to the consumer. In other words, then on the contract page where you sign for your credit, there should be an actual page that's not a font size 4, actually talks about hidden costs, because they are very well hidden, and suddenly things happen. I'm sure that, for instance, Honourable McPherson might have signed something for the credit card a while back, and in there, in font size 2.1, it says that we can put insurance on it if we want to, and I'm sure that is probably the case. Secondly, I want to talk about that these regulations will only be affecting new loans. I do think that long-term loans such as mortgages should definitely be included somehow, because we can't have a situation where, especially with these figures, if somebody is going for the maximum figure of, say, 18.75 on mortgage on slide 16, and they're getting that now, I mean, they're on 19.85, and they're going to keep on 19.85, but everybody else is going to be 1.1% lower. I think that's very unfair to mortgage people with mortgages. So I think that mortgages should be included somehow, and any other long-term loans, because it's very bad that you've got now these people that can't afford it now have to pay more because they signed today, and now somebody signs in 3 months' time, you know, can, you know, reduce their amount. So when it comes to long-term loans, I think that we should look at including them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Let's go, Honourable Elvis, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This investigation is a long overdue one, and I think we need to protect the consumer, but we also need to protect the industry at large, so there must be a balance of sorts. I think the fact that people consume credit today, not for capital purposes, is a result of a bad economic situation that's escalating. So one must just take note that we need to look at this in a holistic manner. Now, we've got escalating prices, and people go use credit to keep up and just buy food and keep a roof over their heads, and that creates a lot of problems. So they need to be protected. On the other end, we must look at industry as a whole and see if we don't harm the industry that provides credit in some way. So my proposal would be that despite the submissions that were opened and made by various parties, that one looks at a regulatory impact assessment as a whole to see where we can find that perfect balance between the two interests. Because what I've heard also from industry, that there's some research that ETI has in their possession, some research by Dr. Hawkins, which we haven't seen. Now, that speaks to the fallout that will take place if the regulation goes too far, on the one hand. So what I'm asking for is a fair and balanced assessment going forward. And then, just with regards to the DTI teams on the credit life insurance, where they submitted, they consolidated submissions, and then they will take consultative with the NCR, FSB, and the National Treasury. We would also like to see that before it actually goes to the minister and the minister makes a final decision, so that we can also give input in that regard as representatives of the people out there. So while we are very happy to receive the reports that you've given today, we would once again like to engage with you in this regard and to ensure that we do protect the consumers on the one hand, but we also protect the industry, because we must remember they create the jobs in the end of the day, and if we harm them, we will have less jobs and we will have more people asking for more loans and we will have more loan sharks in the industry. So we must think holistically about this problem in order to solve it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Albert. Honourable Ian Sahaven.
Thank you, Jane. Positively, I can say that the credit insurance plays a significant role in supporting access to finance or to a lot of people who couldn't afford it previously. In most cases, the only insurance that low-income people can obtain and can allow people to actually increase their insurance, like family and funeral insurance and all that. But also the negative side of this all, this almost every time leads to high levels of indebtedness to the most vulnerable of our society, the poor. As a regulation protecting the consumer, but also the credit providers. Consumers are very seldom properly informed of their rights and their conditions and the consequences of the insurance, like the additional cost of implications. And then commission-driven agents and the set of marketing practices and weak disclosure will force consumers to enter credit contracts that they really can't afford. I would also like to see an Overton report on related issues that mentioned here. Long-term insurance, two of the previous speakers already spoke on that. The consumer, is the necessary documentation supplied and given to the consumer? What language are they given them? Do they always understand what they're signing on? How's the cost of credit life insurance calculated? Other regulations also led to the growth of companies like the African Bank Investment Limited, and since the collapse of the African Bank regulation increased, with a huge impact to the macro economy. Microeconomy or microfinance currencies contribute to a lot to the economy growth in this country. But also people like African Bank, like Louis, we see Louis stores here, or any implication to African banks. Thank you very much.
I just want to add to what Honourable McPherson was saying. I need a better explanation for this slide number 50. You know, I really want your argument. You know, unsecured credit is going down to 20%, but 20% for me is still too high. I don't know, you know, how you have calculated and come after your negotiations to 20%, but it might just be interesting, why do you stick to 27%? You know, when you do an unsecured credit, you are in trouble. So you've got no money, so you go there. Now, that is where we have to protect the consumer. If I'm wealthy, I go to the banks and I negotiate a far better rate. More wealthier, the less your interest rate you're paying the banks. That is made fair, that is how the market works, but we have to protect those who cannot afford credit. You don't do credit, you only do credit if you want to buy a house, or you want to develop something, you want to make money, or you want to buy a motor car. But if you do credit for the wrong reasons, you are in trouble. And that is where we should protect. So I'm concerned about this. I'm also concerned, you know, why is the mortgage rate not going down? Exactly what McPherson asked. So, and the developmental credit, why is it going up, you know? So I do not understand the logic behind this. So if you can just explain that a little bit. You know, it's like going to a restaurant. You buy food. If I want wine, I pay 100, 200, 300% on top of the retail price for a bottle of wine. It's unfair. Credit at these rates for those who've got no other option, it's unfair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kornhoff. Yes, I just would like a full explanation on use of the repo rate. Clearly you explored several areas. What would you use several formula? And in the light of how you've seen the repo rate moving, what's the position now? That's one. The second thing is certainly the issue around mortgages will have to be looked at with perhaps is it possible to look at making some of these interest rates retroactive to long-term loans of that nature? I do have a problem, and I actually would like to explain developmental credit, because that's the policy of this country, to actually use that area and to make it easier to embark on infrastructure and the like. And perhaps you could just explain how that is dealt with. I think the time has also come for us to come back with a breakdown of what someone referred to in the committee as only someone charging 6%. And as we learned 5 years ago, or 4 years ago, I'm not too sure when, for example, Wonga came into the country, it's not a question of 6% at all. And maybe members are not fully aware of the implications. And I'm using it because it was raised by a member, but there are many, many companies giving credit who have these unexplained fees. So if you could look at that issue very clearly. One final issue from myself at this point in time is the reference, DG, that you made to always illegitimate children. I was under the impression that you also paid maintenance after a divorce, and one would assume that technically speaking those children were legitimate. But I think the word we use today, no child is illegitimate at all. No child. Thank you.
My parents say an apology for illegitimate children. No, I agreed that I was just driving a point. So the point is made. After divorce, the children are legitimate. Some rich people are also ordered to continue to maintain their former wives.
it depends on circumstances. So that situation is known. So it means you were drawn. Yeah, no, thank you. That's your understanding. The issue is that my team will assist in answering the questions. Regarding the issue of mortgage, as well as development, I think there was biasness that in this sector, the two sectors, there is no appetite for credit granted, people who provide credit to come into the picture. And then we thought we would be stimulating the appetite for them to go there, because these sectors are sort of sluggish. So maybe we will bias, but it seems as if the committee has got a strong view. And then what I gathered from Honorable Williams and the Honorable Advocate is that before they are finalized, you would like to see them and make inputs. I think it can take us somewhere. Yeah, the issue of balancing, you know, as described by the advocate, I think we can move to one direction. And then that can also be the basis for Honorable McPherson and Honorable Koromhoff in this area that they are concerned, including the chapter, that really we need maybe, they may be passed, I don't know, you will give us a direction, but there is a need immediately, again, to go into detail, you will give us direction. But all in all is that we agree that it's a balancing act. So maybe we will skew it to one. And but we are setting a pleading guilty is a message. So the hidden cost issue, transparency, is true that the affordability adjustment, there is somewhere where sort of an evidence to say under oath to say do this and that, but things can still be hidden. But the demand that I'm hearing is that really it should be real transparent for everybody, not to be cheated like vulnerable person. So we will try that everything should be in open. That's how I can talk to that. And then all the banks in credit life insurance, hold them accountable. Agreed, but the issue of going retrospectively, I don't know, it came into a picture a little bit. Yeah, so when as bureaucrats, when we were engaging, there's some battering that can happen. But maybe in the response of the Honorable Committee, it will be clear. But we will try to demand what is possible. But we didn't want us to put in the government, parliament into disrepute. It goes to constitutionality and the like. That's why we raised this issue here. So that maybe the parliamentary advocates and the like, they can also assist to say, can we go that route? But according to the limited knowledge in the area of law, we were not practicing, we were in the law space. We wouldn't like to take the Parliament of South Africa into dispute. But we will have to hold them responsible. During the break was to say, this issue of saying it will go forward, what about those things that were done before, like the issue of not applying affordabilities and like, maybe if you go into the case of the Desai judgment, there may be a need for declaration there, the agency will talk to us to say, can we really say everything was invalid? That's an example. Maybe that amendment can be opened up, but I will be guided by the agency, but I cannot pronounce now to say really we will have to go back. And then this issue of the mortgage bond of today, somebody enters into it, there is one repo rate, tomorrow is another one, you know. I think really I'm here on thin ice here. I don't have an answer to say, but we use the repo rate guided by the command, and I think even the portfolio committee somehow talked, and then we took that as something that is consistent, because our repo rate, I'm told, they are low. I'm told that they are low. But all of a sudden, let us say, so we didn't predict that. Yeah, so my colleague will maybe deal with others, but I try to talk in generalities.
Thank you, Chair. I really acknowledge all the inputs that have been made by the honourable members, and to an extent, we do concede in some of the areas, you know, in respect of the SMGs. But, however, there's something that I would want to put to the attention of the committee to indicate that this is work in progress, Chairperson. These particular fees have not been reviewed in a long time. In engaging into that exercise, we had to do a balancing act in order to ensure that we reduce the percentages, but also on the other side make sure that businesses do not get to be closed and people lose jobs. So there was also some of the elements, and we really raised the issue of maximization of profits when we met with the stakeholders to say the percentages that have already been there, they are really too much, and they need to be taken down. To the extent that our initial proposal on the unsecured was 24%, but then we had to negotiate with the industries to ensure that we at least we get up to from 32 to 27. Yeah, and I would also indicate that as well, you know, it's a work in progress, and there's a phased approach that we have agreed upon to say, let's give it another 2-3 years and see how it goes, but the main aim is to take them down up to even less than 3-4. So that's the understanding. So much of the things that we had to look at in terms of ensuring that we create a balance between the two. Then coming to the issue of the use of the repo rate, and I mean the formula that was used before was very complicated. Maybe I would also want or request that the receiver would elaborate on it, but it was a very complicated formula that was not understandable by a consumer. To the extent that a repo rate kind of a formula was an easy one to use. Of course, the results are the same. It was an easy one to understand. And unfortunately, as I've even indicated on the presentation, that the economy is not in a good state. You know, all, you know, sectors of the economy are actually, you know, depended upon, affected. And to extent that we might have tried to use the repo rate, but now, you know, come National Treasury, they feel that, you know, on the other side, they're worried they have to go up, and there's somehow nothing we can do about that, you know. So, but I'm sure the Siva will rather, you know, explain the rationale behind. Then on the issue, just to, you know, amplify the issue of development of credit and mortgages, you know, the rates are quite, you know, steep, and we're looking at, you know, going forward, I mean, reducing them gradually. But then, you know, we also need to take into account that we don't want banks or, you know, to say developmental credit division or section is closed down because the interest rates are too low. You know, So it was on their basis that we had to sort of come up into a compromise position. But then knowing that, looking forward, we will have a further reduction after we've assessed the situation. But we do consider that, something has to be done. We need to take them down. But in essence, if you look at it, it's really a work in progress, and it's something that we can work on it gradually until finding, the right, percentages. We want to be as harsh as possible. There were proposals, probably few proposals from the people that you say, you have not reduced enough. When people come forward and make presentations, backing them up with, research to say that this we think this is the most appropriate or reasonable reduction, then you don't have a choice but to concede. But as I've indicated, it's a work in progress. And then on the issue of investigation, I think also NCR will definitely maybe deal with that question in terms of how they have been dealing with investigations since they're coming into effect of all these, pieces of legislation. Hidden costs, I think Donald has already indicated there, but we have even, in terms of our form in the affordability assessment, in the regulations, actually, we indicated that the total cost of credit should be disclosed. And therefore, the question could be, if you don't, then an investigation should be conducted, and then you need to refund consumers, in the event that you are caught in doing that, and of which now is still at a very, early stage that we probably would pick up those issues, but as the investigations or inspections or monitoring are taking place, then we'll be able to pick up those incidents. Because I even remember one of the financial institution or credit card insurance, they were engaging with them, they said, no, we don't charge credit card insurance, but we said, no, it's not that you don't charge it, it's hidden, it's actually inclusive of the total cost of credit, and they considered it. So those are some of the issues that we need to be dealing with and engaging, positively and openly, and of which that would be so far my input, and I would like to hand over to the DIVA to have his response.
Thank you, Chair. As the NCR, we also know to the concerns that are raised by honourable members.
No, it's Mr. Michaud.
That's right, Chair. We know to the concerns that are raised by the honourable members, but it's also important to mention, as the honourable audience has indicated, we need to balance the interests of consumers and credit providers. And members will note that there was actually a substantial reduction of the interest rate on unsecured credit. And short-term credit, the reduction is about 2% per year. The current interest rate at 5% per year gives you an annualized interest rate of 60%. But in the regulation, that will be reduced by 22%. We had to take into account the cost of funding by credit providers, because some of them have to raise funds in the capital markets at a particular cost, and they had to take that into account. And they have operational costs, like rent, labor. So if we had introduced very radical proposals, it meant that some of them would have to be closed down and result in retrenchment and also employment contraction. But we take into account the fact that the cost of credit is still very high, and like the DTA is mentioning now, any further reductions will have to be done in a phased manner so that we minimize the impact on the, we continue to protect the industry also. It remains sustainable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
My comment on the issue of honorable Esther Hazen, the issue of disclosure, marketing, the simple language, financial literacy. During the presentation, we were saying what is left now is to embark on education and awareness to the public. The Consumer Protection Act also deals with these issues. If our education and awareness are well pitched up, then it can deal with a lot of issues that consumers just sign things without understanding the language, but the issue of education and awareness, I think it can really be such. For this year, there is an agreement that a lot of legislation has been passed. Now we need to embark on education and awareness ourselves. So that will come. And then another comment in general is that our responses should not be seen as if we are defending. We would like to be pliable to what the committee is concerned about. It seems that if we will have to write a document before it is finalized, it has to come here, and then the committee will make an input. Then we balance that concern. Yes, that's how I would like to make a proposal that we are not defending here. Thanks.
Excessive, isn't it? So we'll just go back. Some members want to carry far comment on other issues. Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Cornell.
Thanks, Jay. I didn't get any response on the issue of benchmarking and where we are benchmarking. I'd actually like to get in writing, Jay, if that's all right with you. But I also want to know, Jay, I need some guidance from you. I mean, is it within the the ability of this committee to actually reject what has been put out on that Club 15? And I'll tell you why, because I'm very uncomfortable about what I've been told today. I've been told that we need to find sort of this, sort of middle ground, because the banks have overheads and we need to, work out, how to fund each other and all that sort of thing like that. I actually don't buy that. I think that that's not an acceptable, sort of response to say, well, we need to gradually, decrease these limitations, because, I mean, we've seen the story before, gradual limitations, what is the timeline to that? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? And so, I don't accept that, the reasoning behind what is actually put up on that slide. And also, what I say is, I think it's morally wrong for the banks to say, the reason that they must have such high developmental credits, is because, well, if they don't, then they're not going to give us, because it's risky. I mean, that is not a good answer, and it's a poor excuse. And if the banks had said that, I would urgently get them to rethink that stance, because I don't think that is a great thing to say to the department, if in fact that is what they've actually said. I think, I think we must also be clear that, say, that straight off the bat, banks make 3.5% on repo rates. That is their base that they work off. Every single day, that is their markup. And then they obviously increase it according to the risk profiles. If that's a discussion that we need to have about what the overheads are, I'd like to see that. I'd like to know what those figures are that justify the department, meeting halfway with them, as being told today. But just in closing, I'd like to get some guidance from you, Chair, on whether it is within the ability of this committee to actually reject slide 15, and then for the department to come back to us as soon as possible with revised figures, because I'm looking uncomfortable agreeing to something like this.
Thank you for that input, Honourable Kuntner. Right, would you like to respond before I make my response? Thank you. Sorry, Honourable Albert, you had your hand up. My apologies.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to request that the
the report by Dr. Hawkins is formally submitted to this committee so that we can have sight of it before we meet again on this matter. Thank you very much.
Right, we'll take account of that here at the table. All right, this was just for the rest of the committee as well. You're referring to Professor Hawkins, are you? Right, thank you. Yourself,
DTI. Our response on the issue of benchmarking, we thought it affected being that whenever we do things we need to benchmark, we will show our benchmarking. UK as an example, the benchmarking will be done, will be shown, and then the issue of accepting our explanation gradually, taking into account this and that, that's why I said it should not be seen as if we are defensive. We are saying the committee has requested that they should see the final, before the finalization of everything or whatever, they will like to see and make their input. I thought that was another way of saying let's go in one direction, but and then the issue of the reporting, we said we inclined to use the repo rate because of the advice that we got. However, we might have been biased to it, like the issue of development with credit and long term and like, so we are prepared to be shown the other side, probably during the engagement when our final sort of interim report before the minister determined it will be enriched, and that's where we're going. So because we introduced something to the committee and the synthesis is a real consultation with the committee will request that really maybe these things can be reduced into sort of in writing to say these are the issues, and the committee will update this view because of 1, 2, 3. And the department needs to beef up their approach. But on the issue of working with industry to say we don't want them to be closed, as an example, that is not the intention to close the industry. The intention is to say how can we mitigate. And we came to a conclusion that because this issue is long that we never made a review, now they have compounded into where we are now. Maybe we are just living on top. Please assist us because there will be a sort of I'm concluding step. There will be sort of a, not hit back, but as the bureaucracy, if we don't see the country talking in one voice, there may be a need to say, suspend everything and then we go next year or whatever is a political election, it comes to us as bureaucrats and we don't know how to react sometimes. So we would like to guide that here that we are accounting to you, and then please guide us to say you didn't take into account 1, 2, 3 that. So that is how we are pitching our approach.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much, DPG. Now
The regulatory impact assessment.
Yes.
May I clarify? We are talking about the report that we did through NCR. Yes. Consulting stakeholders, and then to the comments, and then some banks didn't participate in being requested, postponement,
and then we were laid, and thereafter we were taken to court, where the consultation was from the industry. We are talking about that report. Yeah. If we are talking about that report, we are maybe prepared to give it to the committee in confidence, and then we don't have anything to hide, and then we are committed to give it to the committee in confidence. Thank you.
Yes, I think we all just need clarification on that particular issue. The other thing as well is, when we look at this, basically, as the agenda indicates, this was a briefing. This was a briefing on the issue. It didn't require decision, per se, today. And I think that's very important, that we handle things as they are placed on the agenda. However, having said that, I think it is important for the committee to make it clear about the issues where they see things differently. And of course, I believe motivated in that direction. But some of the things that we have raised, including those that perhaps I have raised myself this year, we do need to go into them a little bit more. Never let it be said that we shot through, you know, from the hip, as it were. We do need to look into this matter, and I have asked Mr. Hermans not to consult with our parliamentary legal advisor on certain issues, and I didn't know if he or she was here today, because I never saw any note that that person was not available. And invariably they're not when there is a briefing, do you follow, because there's no decision. However, some briefings are more serious than others, especially considering that this revolves around regulation, which is secondary legislation. And we need to look at the primary piece of legislation in this regard in response to a question you yourself raised, Honourable McPherson, to see what authority is given to the Minister regarding this. And also at ourselves, and same token, our own, of course, constitutional authority delegated by the Speaker to committees. So I do want to look at those issues, and let me put it this way, I'll certainly brief you on a preliminary response tomorrow at tomorrow's meeting. Is that clear with everyone? Right. We are going to make known through Mr. Hermans the issues, again, that we've raised, and our reasons for raising these issues. And we would expect that from your side you would indicate if there was any way these could be reviewed. And I'm looking here, you know, at slide 16, etc. It talks about these are finalizations, and then it talks about the ministers made a final determination. Do you follow? We do want to clarify these issues further than our own parliamentary legal advisers. But having said that, we've come on a long journey with the, you know, the Credit Act, the limitations around the insurance, and of course, the capping of the interest rates at this particular point. It's the first time, though, that you have raised the issue of the formula with the, you know, the repo rate. Now, it's not a question of saying no or yes. I think we just need to find out a little bit more. Are many countries using this, and what is their governance basis, etc., so we can get a better understanding in this regard. But I also want to mention to members that, you know, I would like to remind them of our own environment, economic environment, and that we need to take cognizance of that as well as we move forward. That we cannot ignore. It would be reckless and irresponsible for us to do that. So that is where we're going to leave it today. And I do want to indicate that no matter what the agenda says tomorrow, I have asked Mr. Hearns to please include some minutes. And I hope that that is being done. It's last year's minutes, a couple of them that weren't completed. And we have got a program that we've handed out to you, the quarterly one. Yes. We are reviewing it somewhat. In principle, we will not be using as a committee full
when Parliament cancels certain meetings or when legislation fails. And on that note, I would like to thank all of these committee members who are here.